Today on a special rambling about cars, how often do you stumble upon, out of nowhere it seems, a Ford dealership that's 30-some years old with cars still in the showroom sitting brand new? This was a big story a couple weeks ago. We are very, very honored to have the person who rediscovered this place with us today. We have a lot to ramble about, so let's roll. It's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith. Mr. Chris Bruce, my co-host across the way, please, Mr. Bruce, introduce us to our very special guest here coming to us from across the pond, as they say.
Absolutely. So we are doing the special early episode of Rambling About Cars with Darren from the Auto Retro YouTube channel. Darren is the man who discovered that treasure trove, that kind of diamond in the rough time capsule of vintage Fords in Germany. I think we're going to say the city later on, but we're still kind of, basically, we don't want some bad person to go there and do something bad there. So we're still trying to be a little bit circumspect about where it is, mm-hmm. But he does reveal the city in his latest video. But Darren, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for being on Rambling About Cars. And if you'd like to say anything for a moment before we get on with the show, go ahead.
Please introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm Darren from Auto Retro, and thanks to you guys for having me, and a special thanks to for starting a bit earlier for me. I really do appreciate it, and I'm just enjoying being here. It's great, and anything you want to know, I'm there. I'm quite open to all questions.
Oh, don't say that. This is Rambling About Cars. Next thing you know, we're going to be talking about trains and weird homebrew wines, and the next thing you know, it's just going to be
talked about wine. If it was homebrew video games, we'd talk about that.
But. Maybe homebrew video games. But I mean, well, let's give our viewers a couple minutes here to chime in. Darren, I mean, just tell us a little bit about yourself. Obviously, you like cars. I'm assuming you have Auto Retro, which, by the way, is Auto Retro on YouTube. You're going to have some great content coming up there. You have some great content there right now, as we've already seen. So yeah, just tell us a little bit about you and your car history.
So yeah, I'm just absolute car fanatic. I do know quite a few people as well. We're all in this kind of a car obsession together, I suppose. And yeah, it's been a lifelong thing for me, and it's just now is the tip. And yeah, it's a new YouTube channel, but obviously I've been doing this for so many years now, and there's so many experiences and so many different things about cars that I've been doing that I think it's just I need to start sharing it, and that's really what I'm doing now. There's so much stuff going on, and yeah, we've got the idea came for the channel about 3 years ago. I actually set up the channel, but we've just trying to get the idea together to what to do, and it's starting to come together now, and the first few videos are up, and yeah, we've got loads of great content coming up.
Very good. Well, if you jump over to the channel, Auto Retros UK on YouTube, you've got four videos there. And while you have a young channel, you already have a video with 1.3 million views. How does that feel?
It's just got a bit crazy, really. I mean, I thought to myself, it'd be good to get about, I don't know, a few thousand views, but it's really gone mental. But I suppose, you know, the cars themselves are what has pushed this, because they're just they're special cars to people over here. And I suppose to the rest of the world, they might just seem like throwaway old Fords. But if you really get into them, that people love them. And when you go over to see these cars in person, it's just it's unbelievable. I can't really tell you how I felt when I looked at it. I mean, I started the video I was speaking quite a lot, you know, I'm coming to have a look at these cars. And then when I got to the cars, I didn't really say a lot because I was just so speechless, because the cars themselves, it was just especially as having these Fords for probably for 30 years, you know, throughout my life, I've had old Fords and stuff like that. And to see some brand new ones in front of me, and I could tell how new they were. It was so overwhelming.
Well, we were talking just a little bit before we started here. Really, if you want to see a like new 1965 Ford Mustang or if you want to go see a like new original E-Type Jaguar, you can probably go out and find one somewhere because people have loved those cars. They've kept those cars. They've restored those cars. Nobody is going to see just like a basic Fiesta. No, nobody is saving those cars. So when you find something like this, in my mind, at least in my heart, it's more special because this truly is a time capsule of that period of everyday life in that period. And because of that, that car is special to me.
They're not just brand new cars, though, because there's a lot of low mileage cars. You know, someone might buy a car and, you know, it's got 5,000 miles on the clock or 300 miles on the clock, and they've bought it and put it in their building, their garage, and they're trying to keep it original and or concours condition. But these cars haven't been prepared for sale. They've never seen an owner. So when a car comes off of the transporter, it'll have all the dealership, all the factory stuff taken off of it, like the protectors on the doors, the wax, the plastic on the seats, the stickers. I mean, there's some little chrome trims on the side of the door strips, and it's black and chrome, and there's original tape over the black that would have been peeled off before it was given to someone. So this is the closest thing. It's another level of originality. This is factory fresh, these cars, and that's the difference between even with a 500 mile car. It's a complete difference.
Oh, for sure. We see that a lot. Like I was saying, especially with cars like Corvettes or Mustang, things like that, where a person will buy it. And just my experience being on the auto side and the collector side and the dealer side for a few years, there would be people buying these cars specifically with the idea of I'm not putting it on the road. They would contact the dealership and say, don't even do your pre-delivery work. Keep the wrappers on the seats, keep the stickers on it. Don't touch it. I'm going to leave it that way. It's a collector, but with like a Fiesta, you know, that's what makes this so amazing.
Yeah, they're all throwaway cars. So if those cars had been sold originally, they probably wouldn't exist nowadays. It's not something that would have been kept, any of these cars. But the fact that he couldn't sell these cars, I mean, it shows on the follow-up story that we've got there that you're showing. All these cars here like that, that's a Cortina. It's in Germany, it's a Taunus, but it's the same as a Cortina. There's a Granada there. They're all brand new cars. And he just couldn't sell them because there was an Audi factory next door. The place where it is, which is obviously, it says in the video, it is in Ingolstadt, and it's right next to the Audi factory. And it was just impossible to sell any cars. They would, we've been told, they gave massive discounts to their employees. Virtually everyone in Ingolstadt knew someone that worked at Audi. I mean, if you go there today, when I went there to do the video, there's just Audis everywhere of all ages on the road. It's just 80% Audis. So there's no chance to be selling Fords.
It reminds me a little bit. So my wife and I used to live in Toledo, Ohio, and Toledo is where they make Jeeps, and Jeeps are everywhere in Toledo because either someone works at the factory or knows someone who works at the factory. And so it's a Jeep town, and Ingolstadt, and I've been there, it's very much the same way, where that's where the factory is. People get discounts. And so it's an Audi town. And so trying to sell Fords in where, you know, a competitor is already making vehicles and giving their workers a discount, it's a hard road to hoe. And unfortunately, or I guess fortunately, depending on your opinion, the Auto Stock or Auto Stock, this dealer, because Herr Stock owned it, he ended up with this huge inventory of unsold cars. And can you tell a little bit the story of what Frau Stock did with those cars once he passed away?
Actually, before we jump into that, let me just do a little bit of housekeeping really quick. Since we are on at a much earlier time, folks out there that are catching us live right now, we're on Motor One.com on Facebook, Motor One.com on Twitter, Motor One on YouTube. If you're catching us now for the first time, since we're on early, you can chat with us live on any of those social platforms. Yeah. Just type in a comment, as we go along. It comes into our little command central here. We can see your comment. We can share your comment. So you can join along in this conversation with us, Ramblers. We love having you along. Sorry to interrupt there, Darren. I just wanted to make sure we've got all of our listeners lined up here, ready to go. Tell us about making this discovery.
Well, you know, I saw the photos online. They were really old photos, probably about 13 years old. Mm-hmm. No idea where this was. It was just about seven or eight photos. The cars looked quite new, but they were really blurry photos. They weren't great. And I thought to myself, this is somewhere I'd like to go and have a look. And obviously I wanted to go, and maybe in my head, are they there? Because I thought it could be a chance they're not there. And then maybe, you know, get into have a video. Maybe someone was there, which wasn't in the end. So never mind. But I decided to try and track them down. I nearly gave up. It was very, very hard to find. It was so online. I mean, today you can probably search and find out the address quite easily. But I tell you, about a month or two ago, it was impossible. There was nothing online at all. And we really, really struggled. And then eventually I found out where they were, well, where the dealer was, and then looked on to Google Earth and saw some cars in there. And I thought, that's definitely the cars, but it was an old photo from that as well. So the only way was to go out there. So we went out there.
And I mean, just tell us a little bit about, I mean, you've said, hey, you're a Ford guy. You're obviously really passionate about these cars. Once you got there and you realized, okay, the pictures, I mean, this is all real. You walk up and you're seeing these vehicles inside. I mean, what's kind of going through you at that point? I mean, it's not like you're going up and saying, hey, look at all these classic Mustang. Like I said, you can see those just about anywhere. But I mean, these vehicles in this condition, what's going through your mind there?
I don't know who your famous music idols may be, but it was like someone seeing that. It was like whoever you are a massive fan of, that's, and then you'd be, David Bowie. Just be speechless. There you go. So Bowie. If you saw David Bowie, you'd probably turn into a bit of a gibbering wreck.
Yes.
And that's how I felt. I walked up there with the video, taking a video, doing a YouTube video. Let's go. Let's give it a go. And by the time I got to the windows, I wasn't doing YouTube anymore. I was just pointing a camera and just amazed. It was a really, really surreal moment, because they are really breathtaking thing. When you see them face to face, I mean, the video, I tried my hardest to zoom in. That's why it's quite a zooming in and zooming out, but there's not really much you can do with a, you know, three shop windows. But I tried to get as much detail, because I knew we were all starved of detail. So I just tried to get as much as possible. They're just amazing. They're new. The Escort you see there is probably my favorite, even though it's probably not a lot of people's favorite, but that one is mine. I'd have any one of them. But it's just a really surreal thing.
And you, to just let everybody know, you did a follow-up video that just came out yesterday, I believe, mm-hmm. because finding this dealership and finding these cars in their condition is incredible by itself. For me, the story that leads up to it is bittersweet, I think might be a really good way to describe it. And it also makes me feel good to be part of the car community, because I'm getting a little hokey here. It's not just cars. It's not just, oh, hey, I like cars. I like steering wheels and I like to, there's more to it. And the story behind this kind of shows that you don't necessarily have to be an enthusiast to just appreciate that kind of passion. Can you tell us just a little bit about the story behind it?
Yeah. So obviously I didn't know the story because I barely knew the address. I didn't even know they were there. So, you know, when we took the video and even when we uploaded, we only had what we could find online, which was nothing. And it's come to light since. I've just had messages and emails and, you know, points to things on the net and photos sent through and bits of video sent through. And it just, I've pieced it all together because no one knew the whole complete story, but they were all telling me little bits and pieces. And it seems that the cars were moved in there. I mean, the dealer was, it was a Ford dealer up until the mid-80s, sorry. Some people say 84. I know that that Orion at the front, the gold one, is definitely an 86. And the Escort behind is a late 85, early 86. So I'm saying mid-80s. It's possible we closed it in 84, but still had to buy a few cars through some kind of contract. I don't know. But it's mid-80s it closed. And, yeah, he couldn't sell cars. He just couldn't sell them because it's right next to the Audi factory. And they were offering massive discounts on all of their cars, apparently, we've been told. And it just left him with these Fords that no one wanted at full price. He was very reluctant, I've been told, to give any discounts. And in Germany, people don't really like Fords. They're not really well regarded at all. So, yeah, they just every time he had a car, you know, Ford made him, wouldn't take any back. So that he just parked them in this multi-story car park that he had at the side of his lot. And, yeah, stacked them up. So after you know, several years and decades, really, a few decades of it, he ended up with just cars everywhere. And he died in 94 because he became an independent from the mid-80s to the mid-90s. He was an independent car dealer. So I suppose he just wanted to sell stuff that he could sell. He probably sold Audis, I don't know. But all that stuff went and they were still stuck with these cars. And these six cars were originally seven. And that we found out, obviously, they're unused. We can tell they're unused. We've been told they've all got really low single-digit mileage. You can tell they're off the transporter.
Yeah, you can see plastic just, on the seats even in some of the in some of the cars. Yeah,
and that's why I was zooming in, like you see underneath there, because I just wanted to see that it's definitely new. I've never seen, you know, anti-roll bar brackets as clean as that. It's just they are brand new cars. Brand new cars. And yeah, they were not there in early 95. They would have been in the multi-story car park, but they're obviously on site. And it looks like she moved them in late 95 because there's eyewitness accounts after that saying there's seven cars in there and they describe which cars they were. The blue Sierra just at the back was there early 95 because there's a photo of that on its own. And it looks like she was moving cars in there to try and sell them off.
Okay. And you say she, let's, because the owner died in 94.
Yeah,
that's his widow that's then kind of taking things over here.
Yeah, well, he had 300 cars and probably didn't ever want to get rid of them. He just, maybe he was a bit of a hoarder. Maybe he just didn't want to, you know, give any discounts because that's what we've been told. So she decided that it was time to sell all the cars off. So she had 300 cars to sell, Mrs. Stock and her son. And she had 150 of those were used cars and 150 were still the new old stock Fords. So she could sell off she could sell off all the secondhand used cars. That wasn't a problem. So she sold all those off. But then she decided that she was going to sell all the new stuff, but it would have to be a special pricing formula that she worked out. And that was the original price. Multiplied by, well, it's 400%, so it's three times the original price. So, which worked out well for some of the classics because there were cars in there from the 60s and 70s, which were about 20, 25 years old at the time. And those cars were great bargains because of obviously inflation and all that kind of stuff. So,
want to add that. So, at the time, Germany was on Deutschmarks, and by the time she's selling some of these, they're on euros. So, that conversion, some of those cars were bargains.
Yeah. And they lost it was classic car enthusiasts went crazy. So they're in there and they're just clearing out all their old stock. So all the 1970s cars gone, and the 60s stuff gone. But they were classics at the time. Whereas these cars were just old cars. They were 10-year-old cars.
Right.
And she wanted, you know, three times the original price, which was even more money than the original, like the classic stuff. So for these, she wanted more than a classic car, and they just didn't sell. These six, now that's the what you can see there is what the newspaper article. But yep. Yeah, so the six magazine cars that were the front were, yeah, magazine. Yeah, on the six cars that she's got in there were the ones that she couldn't sell. There was another one which was just slightly older. That was a 1980 Fiesta, probably the Fiesta that you guys got over there.
Yep,
that shape.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we had that era Fiesta.
Yeah, so the early shape Fiesta was in there, and that sold, I think it was 2000 or 2001. By that time, that was more of a classic car.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it was, by that time, it grew into its price, because I'm sure the price was exactly the same for all those years. And someone bought it at seven kilometers on the clock, and it's been said now that it's got 28 kilometers on the clock, so that's still being kept as new. But the other cars are still there.
So then, she brought these cars, the ones that we see, into this dealership, and as I understand it, it was just kind of set up as a memorial to her husband.
Yeah, I'm sure at the time it probably was more of a, you know, she's not going to sell those cars, because think, if you look at the cars, I mean, one's bright green. There's
but it's not silver. Gold. Right, it's not. I'll take almost anything these days that isn't silver or gray.
Yeah, and you've got the two gold, the Escort and the Orion, which at that point would have been a color of the 80s and not of the 90s. So they would have looked really out of place. I mean, in fact, even the metallic red one would have probably looked out of place at the time. The Fiesta was just a car that probably wouldn't have sold. So she's put these to one side and said she'll give them to her grandchildren. I'm guessing it's probably because she knew they were never going to sell. She probably worked out her pricing strategy wasn't going to work, but still decided, I'm not going to sell these cars. So these cars you can see now, there's a Capri there and some other Fords, right. The other ones. That's the part.
There are two tragedies of this story that I wanted to point out. You have this image here, and you mentioned it in the video, of all of these spare parts that looks like essentially a row of hoods, I'm suspecting, and apparently it was all sold for scrap metal. And I imagine there are umpteen Ford enthusiasts in Europe who are like, no, they're pristine hoods that I could have had for my car, and
that you may not be able to get now, because I mean, who's interested in saving some of these cars? I had, as an example, I had a 1987 Mercury Sable station wagon a few years ago that was an estate. It was really neat at the time. And then over the years, it just got forgotten and nobody really wanted to take care of it. They stopped making it. It had a very distinct front headlight bar. And Ford stopped making it, obviously, I think after, you know, 10 years or so, or whatever. But then aftermarket companies stopped making it, and it's now become unobtainium. And it's not because it was rare. It was because who's taking care of an 87 Mercury Sable? Well, now the people that are, like all five of us, you know, it's like, well, how are we going to get this stuff? So I'm with you there, Bruce. Seeing all of those old parts is almost almost too much, because you think a lot of that stuff is now unobtainium.
Yeah.
And only if we could go back then and get it.
And then the other one is this Capri, which looks to be, Darren, you might have to correct me, it looks to be very late 60s, very, very early 70s. So, you know, early Capri.
Capri Mark One.
Yeah,
It's also said that I didn't put in the video because there wasn't enough time, and I was rambling myself about it, and I thought I better cut it down a little bit. But in those panels, someone mentioned that there was either one or two, as in a pair of complete rear quarters, for those Mark One Capris. and they were scrapped, which is just so, it's just so sad, really. But yeah, it was just old parts, and it was probably not really an eBay, you know, available at the time, and it wasn't it wasn't an internet time, was it? So yeah, they scrapped them.
It's just so we have the six cars that are in there now that and obviously, I mean, we say abandoned, but it's not really abandoned. The cars and the location have kind of been kept up over the years, correct?
Yeah, if you can just see in that picture there, you'll see the multi-story car park on the right-hand side of that little picture. It's the only point in the video that actually shows it. I realized that I haven't actually taken any proper videos of it because I was just so interested in the cars. But she lived there, apparently, lived above the in those little windows there. Apparently, she lived in there. And she just had the cars downstairs, and she. It was the dealer. There's a picture somewhere on there of what it looked like originally.
I think
it's more towards the beginning, a bit closer back.
I definitely saw that picture.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's around there. Very close. Just after that, I think. Just after the wheel.
Just after the wheel.
It's just there, I would say.
It's such a fantastic. It's just such a fantastic story. She was there. She kept the place up. She took care of the cars.
Yeah, a lot of people said that it was, a memory to her husband. That's what it looked like originally.
There we go.
She stayed there. She lived there. She lived on site in those windows above the thing, and. Yeah, a lot of people have said that she just cleaned it, maintained it, painted it, because obviously it's a different color to what it sees there. It's actually, I've just realized only the other day that it's actually a different color now to what it was in 2010. The pictures from 2010, it was white, and now it's kind of like a magnolia kind of color. So, yeah, she was living there and painting it all up and keeping the cars clean. But I don't think that she would have. I mean, the cars definitely haven't moved in a long time. I don't think she ever really did anything with them. Just wiped them over, I suppose. There's in the showroom, there's where the blue Sierra is. There's a bit of see-through plastic that's on against the wall. I don't know where it is on the video. It might not even be on this video, but you can see this piece of see-through plastic, which is facing like against the wall, and there's a picture of the showroom in 1995, and that plastic is there. It's just a random piece of plastic, so it just goes to show that it wasn't really anyone was doing much in there, because a piece of plastic would have been moved in 30 years. So I think it was just a clean out, wipe down, close the door kind of thing. But she just, I think that's what it was. But then now she's not living there anymore, and we've been told she's in a care home. I'm not sure what the outcome is now or anything like that. I don't know how that's going, but that's what we've been told. They're just being left. There are a lot of cobwebs. I know you can't really see it in the video, but there are a lot of cobwebs, and there is a little bit of dust. It's not 30 years of dust, but there is some dust. And probably the most asked question, and I just see this all the time. If you look on my comments on my original video, it's why the tires were tires.
How are the tires still have air in them, you know?
Do you know what? I've got a Ford van, which we had a conversation about earlier, which I won't go right into it, but that has been off the road for 20 years. And I have the four original tires from that, and they are all pumped up, and I've never, ever put any air in them because it's never been on the road. It's just literally a roll on, roll off kind of thing. So there's definitely could easily be some air in those tires. Maybe they were pumped up a few years ago, but
if it was being taken care of to some degree, I mean, it wouldn't be hard to put a little bit of air in there. And you're right.
Yeah.
And also it appears to be climate controlled. I mean, you can see on the left, the radiator, and on the, it presumably, you know, it's not like they're just sitting out in the elements. So, you know, that's going to prevent a lot of issues with stuff drying out and whatnot. Yep. So, yeah.
I mean, the stems, you know, if the stems stay up, the beads all stay seated well, I mean, that's usually where you get a lot of your leakage from. You know, after time, you'll get some some issues with the valve stems or some corrosion on the wheel that that can just cause a little bit of a bead leak.
Inside, they're brand new. Yeah. They're all brand new wheels, brand new steel rims, brand new tires. Right. And probably haven't even turned a wheel. I suppose if you drove them out of there, they'd all go flat instantly. But at the moment, probably. I reckon they're just holding their own.
I would love to see him just. I don't know if I'm going to get a hate mail for this. I would love to just see him stay right there because it's such a perfect time capsule. You know, it's a glimpse of that era of that time of cars that you just don't see.
I think they should build a museum around it and turn that whole place into a car museum with more cars at the back. I think that would be a great place.
You know, it feels like almost something that Ford should take care of, you know, Ford of Europe, that they should just like, you know, here is the Ford of Europe Museum. This is what it was like to go into a Ford dealership in 1986 or whatever. And, you know, our buddy Tim Ryan could get them all of the original brochures and stuff and just show, like, you know, almost like, you know, going back in time, you could walk in there and this is the Ford dealer of 1986. Because when we talk about classic Fords, a lot of times we're talking about cars from the 50s and 60s, but the stuff from the 80s, a lot of times, so far, it's kind of getting short shrift.
Are you listening, Ford?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know what they would, how it would be done. I don't know if they'd, how they would do it, but I think it's definitely needs to be kept in the way it's been. If they're doing something right, because the cars are still there, and they definitely wouldn't be in that condition even if they were just driven once. So there is, I think they're looking good. They're holding their own. But yeah, I'd like the gold Escort.
So Darren, I'm curious, how did you hear about this? Like, what was your first inkling that this existed? You know, before, obviously you said you had to do a ton of research and stuff like that, but what was the first, like, you know, little thing that you heard that, oh, there's this time capsule of old Fords in Germany? How did that start?
Well, because as a group, there's a few of us, and we are admin on some pages on Facebook and groups. There's one called Sitting There Rotting on a Driveway. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but that's just basically, it just shows, there's a couple of 100,000 people on there, and it just shows cars that are in a bit of a dilapidated state. Gotcha. And this fired up on there. And yeah, it just seemed, I thought this can't be new. They can't be new. This must be it's crazy. But then I looked more into it. I thought, actually, they do look absolutely immaculate. And I've had some really low mileage ones of these. Mm-hmm. And this just wipes the floor with anything I've ever seen. So, it was just a random Facebook post. And I had a look online and found the original post. And it was so vague. It just said Southern Germany. I don't even think it was Southern Germany by the time I got there, but maybe they were just trying to put people off the scent.
Yeah.
But I then I got a dealership brochure, and I went through it, and I was planning on going through the whole lot, and I thought there's got to be an easier way than this. It had 2,000 dealers, and I nearly gave up, but then we had a bit of an idea of roughly where it was, so I managed to locate it and pin it down, and then. Yeah, it's time to go out.
Stickers still in the windows. How far away? I mean, how long of a drive was this for you to get there?
It was 1,000 miles from my house in England. We did do some other stuff like videos on the way back to try and tie it all in. And they're coming up. This was the one that I was going for, though. But yeah, it was that black thing you can see there on the door is one of the protectors as well.
Yep.
It's just
some of those videos will be. Can you tease, just like give us a little idea of what those other videos will be?
Yes. Well, we've gone through some barns in Germany on the way back. A good friend of mine lives in Germany, and I've explored probably most of the barns that he can think of, and we've gone around having a look through, and we found some really old Fords, older than these, that are mm-hmm. laid up. We found some a couple of old BMWs in these barns. Yeah, some crazy car, a few Jaguars, BMW 535i. He's took out some of his car collection as well. He's got a Corvette. Loads of stuff. So we've just got amongst the old cars and just tried to, it's just anything about old cars, really. So we've got a couple of videos lined up.
Barn finds. I mean, Bruce and I have been writing about cars here with Motor One for years. I think I'm coming up to 7 years, and Bruce, you were here before I was.
I started in 2016 here, and I've been writing car news for over a decade. Yeah.
And in that amount of time, I can't even begin to count how many barn find stories we've seen. And you think, okay, this, nobody's going to be able to top this one. And then usually within a month or two, nobody's going to be able to top this one. And then like a month or two later, it's like, where does this end? I'm continually fascinated by all of the vehicles that are somehow or other. I mean, if I died tomorrow, looking around, if I died tomorrow, who knows what I've got a Toro Show parts car, or not parts car, well, it could be a parts car, project car sitting in my shop. If I died tomorrow, I suppose that could be forgotten for a little while, and then they would be like, who was this weird guy that was hoarding this Ford Taurus? What's that about? So I mean, some of these just blow my mind.
Right.
When you see vehicles,
someone buys a car, they roll it into the barn at some point in time, it sits there for decades, whatever, and then someone eventually finds it. This is different. These are undelivered, unsold vehicle. This is essentially a time capsule of a 1980s Ford dealer.
Right.
It's unprepared as well. They've not even been prepared for you. Is that black strip that's on that door there? It's there's plastic on the seats. These are not ready for customers to ever look at. Exactly. The only one that I think is half ready, maybe the Orion, because it's got an Orion sticker on the window that looks like it was a sales sticker. But other than that, no, I think they're just straight from the transport. I think they knew they weren't going to sell, and they literally just wheeled them off and put them straight into storage. I think they gave up at this point.
It's a bummer in a way, because as we were talking about this a bit before the show started, and you were saying that you got comments that these cars should come home because Britain has a love of Fords, but these cars were all made in Cologne, Germany. Like, they were made 200 miles away, 300 miles away. I don't know what Ingolstadt to Cologne is, but it's not that much versus in the UK. Like you said, it's 1,000 miles away from you. So it's fascinating to think that a lot of your viewers want them to come home, even though kind of they are home.
They're so well loved in the UK. These cars, I mean, they did build some in the UK, but they were only for the UK market. And they only built some Escorts in the UK. I don't think they built any Sierras. But the UK ones didn't really hold up as well as the German built ones. And all of the German market cars would have been German built. And you can tell quite easily by the VIN plates and even by the, how well they're standing up. But I would say that they're all German built cars because they are German market. I bought a lot of cars from Germany and brought them back to the UK. They're all the German ones are German built. Cool. So, but there's a love for these cars in the UK. The German market they're not really big fans. They're more into their Opels, BMWs, that kind of stuff. But this for the UK is just, people are really, they would love these kind of things.
Well, I mean,
you could sell them probably is in the UK.
You have the video up there that we said earlier on has 1.3 million views. So, I mean, it's out there, and that's just a fantastic number. How many messages? Do you have any idea, any scope of just how far this is gone? And how many people have you heard from? Obviously, you heard from us, and actually, you actually, I think, pinged us a couple of weeks ago, and we appreciate that.
I appreciate that.
Do you have any scope of just how far this has gone?
It's gone crazy. It's gone absolutely crazy. There's a couple of thousand comments on the thing. A lot of people don't believe it. They seem to think it was staged, which I'm certainly not going to get all the way over 1,000 miles into Germany with a transporter full of new old stock Fords, hire a showroom and wheel them in. It's ridiculous. The thing is that you can't stage that kind of stuff. If they were all immaculate and perfect condition with no dealership stuff on them, then I wouldn't even be videoing them, because I think they're really clean Fords. But the fact that you can see how new they are, you can't replicate that. Even a Concours car, they're underneath the wheel arches of the Orion. The factory underseal is sprayed, and there's a stripe, and you can see the gold on one part of it, and then just where the machine has just striped it. Anyone that was going to restore that car would have painted it up in gold or fully undersealed it. They'd never would have done half. So the way I see it, and I've done a lot of thinking about this over the last couple of weeks, these cars are perfectly imperfect. They're not perfect cars, but they're close. And they look like they've just been quickly thrown together and thrown out. And that's it.
I know exactly what you mean, because I've talked to some Corvette restorers before and some other Chevy restorers. Especially from the classic muscle car era, some of them get really particular in their restoration. You have to spray it this way to make sure you get overspray in the right areas, because that's how it was done from the factory imperfect. We've seen various videos before and some barn finds where you can kind of tell it's set up. This definitely not. You've done so much research, so much backstory on this. You have the older images to go from. Yeah, absolutely not set up. I remember seeing a video one time, with somebody with a quote unquote barn find, and look at what we found in this barn under this cover. And it's like, you take the cover off and it looks almost pristine. It's like, okay, well, obviously that hasn't been abandoned, and it's sitting in this barn. What are the tracks behind it there in the dirt? And you just happen to pull this cover off, and here's this beautiful car. Not set up in the least.
And that's it. It's just, they are very genuine cars. I think they've all got one digit mileage. I think the only one that might have more than that is the Fiesta, because I think that was actually a demonstrator, even though it was unregistered. And some have said that it's got around 100 miles on it, but I don't think it's got that much.
No, it's worn out.
So it's one of the high mileage ones.
Yeah.
But these, yeah, you can see these are all, they're all, especially the ones on the blocks. You can see them on the blocks in that video, and you can see all the factory. It's obviously new. But anyone in Germany that was going to stage this wouldn't do it with some old Fords. They'd do it with some BMWs or something like that, because no one has sold Fords over
there. Mercedes or something like that.
Yeah, something. Yeah. Not with six base model Fords, including one in, pea soup colored green, and a couple of gold Escorts and a Sierra. And for what reason as well? Just to not publicize it and never just have someone by chance 13 years later come along with a video camera and just make it go viral. It's just impossible. It's impossible. Totally. It is what it is. But they are really unbelievable to see them. I mean, I know you said you went to Ingolstadt. Is it you, Bruce, that said that?
I have been. I've been to Ingolstadt twice.
Well, if you ever go to Ingolstadt, even though you've seen the video, I'm sure you'll find out where it is. Go and have a look, because it's just breathtaking.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
It's a fantastic story. I mean, what surprised you about all of this? I mean, obviously there is the shock of seeing the cars, but I guess I'm asking a little bit deeper. What's really just surprised you the most out of this whole experience of tracking this down, finding the cars? What's been the most surprising thing?
Most people would answer that, you know, the overwhelming response, it has been really overwhelming, but there's a part of me that's not surprised because of how well people in the UK are just obsessed with these cars. What really got me was how new they were. I didn't realize they were going to be that new, and they are. I thought they were just going to be new cars parked in the dealership. I didn't realize they were going to be factory fresh. And that's what's got me through all this. And that's just, that will stay with me. Definitely. That's the thing that's overwhelmed me.
So Derek, you've mentioned your team before, and we saw there's someone else videotaping in one of the videos. And I am a big person that you got to give credit where credit is due. So who is that team of yours? Is it a buddy of yours? Is it a spouse? Is it, you know, whatever, who is working with you on this project?
Okay. Well, at the dealership, you saw my wife in the reflection. She was with me. That's my wife, Shona, who's been so supportive and, you know, picks up a camera, drives 1,000 miles across Germany with me to look at some cars, and has climbed through barns and all sorts of stuff with me filming while I've been doing this crazy stuff. She's been absolutely fantastic. And I've
Word
got
up
a friend of mine.
I've been married over definitely. 10 years. Smith, you've been married over 20, right?
Yeah, it's been that long.
So, yeah. You can't do it without the wife.
Go ahead. I've got a friend of mine in Germany called Marius, and we have known each other for about 14 years now. And he's one of my closest friends, and he's in Germany, and he's just as obsessed with, he's more obsessed with cars than me, I think. He opens the door for me for all this kind of stuff abroad. And I've got a couple of other guys that work on the Facebook page as well. I've got Zach, who does a few bits and pieces. And a few of us that get together, and we know a lot of people on the scene as well. So we're quite ready to try and get, we're just trying to promote some old cars, really. I think there's a turning point in the world now of new stuff and old stuff, and there's going to be a very big divide. And I think without getting too far into the, you know, new cars are bad, old cars are good kind of argument, I think there's going to be a real big divide with the people that embrace the new technology and refuse the new technology. And I think in that case, there's going to be a big divide. And I think on my side of it, I'm going to stick with the old stuff. And I think it's all going to be revived, a big revival for the old stuff. So, I'm here to see what I can do.
I think it's a very astute observation. I'm seeing that already. I'm actually finding that I still seem to be going towards the old stuff. Although when I drive the new stuff, I don't really mind it. To a degree, I guess. I'm always suspicious of vehicles that are smarter than me or appear to be smarter than me. So when things are automatically updating and it's tracking my location, I always think there's going to be somebody that pops out from behind a bush and say, Smith, what are you doing? You're driving 78 in a 75 zone. You know, some weird stuff like that. But I definitely see some of that kind of divide that you're talking about. And I think maybe now more than at any point, I think we're seeing more nostalgia. That I think is driving a lot of people like yourselves to not just go out and try to buy cars or get a collection, but just go find them, explore, and bring them back into the spotlight for a little bit, even if it's just a little walk down memory lane, you know?
And you know what? A lot of the comments have been, there's, apart from the tire comments and the is this stage comments, there's been quite a lot of people that have thanked me and said, you know, this has taken me back. Someone said it made them cry. It took them back to the 80s, that kind of stuff. And it is just that feeling, I suppose. And people love to go back to a different time that they can't, otherwise they can't get back there.
Exactly. You
know? Right. So it's, I mean, it's a memory. It's a memory. And yeah. What does it take to get that memory? Do you need to just look at an old photo? Do you need to take a walk down a certain street that maybe you haven't been to for 20 years? Coming across basically a time capsule dealership of cars that you would never, ever expect to see today. The basic transportation cars, if you will, still preserved. It's a different kind of memory because, I mean, you can look at a Lamborghini Countach and have memories of the 80s, right? But yep. It's not, but it's going to be a different, but it's going to be a different memory than seeing an old Fiesta.
Yes.
Well, it's as well, you know, yeah, your Lamborghini and your, you know, your Ferrari F40 and your Porsche 959, all of these people love these cars. Oh, it's amazing. And, but they've never owned one. But exactly. Then if you dive deeper, you'll find it's the car that they had on their wall or the model car they had or something like that. And that's where they've got that kind of the dream car back in the time. So I suppose people were just trying to follow their dreams that they didn't quite make it, I suppose, and mm-hmm. bring back a better time and have the cars that they probably once had or didn't have. Coincidentally, this is my problem as well, because I had cars from, say, 1993, 1994. And I was, so for me to buy now a car that I had then is a bit difficult because by 1997, I had about 100 cars. So at this point, I'd gone through a lot of old stuff.
100 cars in 4 years.
Yeah. 100
four or five cars years.
Yeah, I know a few here and a few there, and I'd get rid of that and get, and I got a bit obsessed with them and then just old stuff and breaking down and trying to fix them. And they're all a bit different. So for me, I appreciate all old cars and there's a memory and everything.
I like how you think.
I'm a bad car owner.
You're not a bad car owner, but okay. So my little backstory here for a while, I haven't done it in a few years now. The cars that I have now, well, the Subaru is less than a year old to me at this point. It's an 04 Subaru Forester. It's
coming up on a year, but yeah.
But for a while, every 6 to 12 months, I would just buy my cheap used car, fix it up a little bit, enjoy it for 6 or 12 months, get to know it, sell it, move on. You know, an addiction. So I haven't had 100 cars, but I've had 34, I think, at last count in the last 20 years or so. Most of those costing under $2,000, some costing under $1,000, a few costing under $500, that were all drivable, maybe some wouldn't pass inspection. But it's this process of getting this old car and learning what makes it special or different or unique that I love. It's an endearing quality to me, even when it's something that doesn't work. Like I had a Dodge Spirit where the driver's door wouldn't lock. Or maybe it was the passenger door. Or no, that's it. The passenger door wouldn't unlock. So, I mean, weird little things like that. You take a Honda Civic, you take a brand new Honda Civic, park it on a dealership lot. It's just like the other 20 Honda Civics that are sitting on the dealership lot.
Yeah.
You move that 20 years down the road, each one of those is going to be different. Each one of those will have a different set of circumstances that took it to the here and now. And I love learning about those circumstances. I can't imagine doing that with 100 vehicles. My God.
Yeah, but I mean, when I say 100 cars, I didn't probably drive all of those 100 cars. There was lots that were probably just, most of them were wrecks and were never going to get back on the road and never did. But there was something for me to mess about with in my younger years. I was always driving some of them, but some of them never quite got there. But it was the experience of owning them. I think I was they were all very, very cheap as well, probably close to scrap money. But it was the pleasure of owning them. And maybe that was the car that I was going to keep until next week.
next week. Well, I've got to ask now, of all of those cars, is there like a top five that you remember? Just really your top five, I guess, if you will. If you can even narrow it down like that, that's going to be tough.
Well, the problem I've got is there's certain cars that I had that that I used to drive, and I'm more attached to those cars just because I've got memories in them. Some of the cars I didn't drive, so I didn't get attached to them. But I suppose if we take away the emotion out of it, and it's the cars that I really liked and wished that I could have done, there was how far are we going back? Are we going to go to just that first 100 or just in general?
Let's open it up in general.
Whatever you
in
like.
In general.
Okay. Well, the first one is the that I wish I could get back now would be a Toyota Supra, Celica Supra 1985. There's a model number for that, but I don't know.
Oh, we just became best friends.
Yeah, if I could get that. The one with the it's kind of got like the grill that goes down, and it's got a bit of a wedge on the grill. So it's not the late 80s one.
And it's got the mirrors that sit a little further forward, more on the fenders. Yeah, the Celica Supra. I love that. Yeah. In fact, I have an unbuilt model of that I need to put together about 20 feet to my left, but I managed to find one in a store.
I bought one of those in 1997 for £100.
Whoa. That's a good buy.
It started as well. It ran. But it wasn't on the road. It wasn't, I think it was, there was probably some serious rust underneath. But I owned a Toyota Celica Supra, and it sat there for a year. And then I ended up selling it for a few hundred pounds later on. And that's one money. I wish I would have kept it. Probably now the second would have been E30 325 M Sport. I never had an M3. I'm only going for the cars that I had, which I really liked. E30 shape. That was an 87 MTech 1. I do like a lot of BMWs, actually.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing, no.
I'm an E24 guy myself.
I had an E30 325E. I don't know if they offered those in the US, but it was a 2.7 liter engine, but they tuned it for torque rather than horsepower. So it only made like 125 horsepower, but 170 pound-feet of torque. I had one of those. That was a good car.
Yeah, I do like an E30. I've had a couple of them, but my 325 I Sport was Dolphin Grey, and that would have been the one that I would I'd just love to have that back. Other than that, what else? I've had all sorts of BMWs. There's been E21s, E28s, E34s, E36. We've got an E36 project coming up as well, because I've got one at the moment, which is going to be also on our videos. All that kind of stuff. I don't know, really. I'm not quite sure what else. It's definitely all of the old Fords, I suppose, because they're not really a driver's car. It's more of a nostalgic reasons. I'm not sure really what else I'm thinking. Probably a 328i E36 BMW that I had, which would be quite a capable car back then.
Yeah.
I learned to drive manual transmission on a brand new E36 328. I worked at a BMW dealership, and I was just, it was a college job. I was in their detail shop. I would wash up the cars, clean them up, that sort of thing. They were like, "You can drive stick, right?" I mean, my brother had manual transmission cars when I was growing up. So when I was like 8 and 9, I would, because they were usually broken down at some point, I would just sit in the car and make noises and work the pedals. I mean, how hard can it be, right? So I kind of knew what I was doing. Stalled it just a couple times. One time, because it was like a demo car for one of the sales guys. So I would invariably take it over here. Can you take it over here to put some gas in it, or take it over there? And I was shifting from second to third, and I was on it a little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
And I may have hit first instead of third. The clutch went back in a hurry on that one. The the rear tire is spun. So anybody in Kalamazoo, Michigan that bought like a 1990, I think it was a 96 or 97 BMW 328 IS, where you might have had some clutch problems shortly thereafter.
That was you.
I apologize. But that was a great car to learn manual on.
So before we finish up the show, we have an email that we want to read. But also, Darren, I want to explain to you, I know the audience knows this, I know Smith knows this, but just so you understand what I say when I'm a bad auto enthusiast, I got, so funnily enough, October 31st of 2005, I took delivery of a 2006 model year here in the US, Mini Cooper, and I still own it today. I drove it all throughout college. I drove it all throughout. My wife was in graduate school. And I actually drove her to work for several years, even when she got a job. And then now we also have two Subaru Outbacks. So I rather than trading cars around, I have not had 100 cars. I've not even had 10 cars.
Is this a confession? This sounds like a confession to me.
It's a guilt confession.
I'm Christopher Bruce, and I haven't purchased enough cars over the years.
Exactly. I should have bought more cars. I didn't, but
you're making up for it now, though.
I got one. Yeah, I am making up for it now. My dad and I are splitting a 1984 Nissan 300ZX Turbo that we are fixing.
Oh, that sounds. You've just fixed all of the last 30 seconds.
Okay. Yeah, but it's an automatic and the transmission is busted.
Toasted. But we're going to fix that.
But it's a 300ZX Turbo. It's a Z31, lovely. Man.
Yeah.
That's the one. That's what you need.
There's no rust on it. It's beautiful. It runs. The engine runs. It just doesn't move right now. We're working on the moving part. We're going to get
moving is always optional with old cars.
This is true.
Using them for what they're intended for. What's the fun in that?
We got a very cool email this week, and I want to share it. And while I got to find the right window, and there we go. This comes from Edward Agans, A-G-A-N-S. I assume it's Agans. Maybe it's Agains. Hey, guys, I've been enjoying your podcast and thought I might contribute to your fall color tour photos.
Yes.
Favorite time of year to get my air-cooled machine out. The first photo is my 1973 Porsche 914 with the 2-liter engine. It was taken on a covered bridge tour of southern Vermont last year. Clearly visible among the foliage is the baked paint from many years in the Arizona sun. The other photo is of the car after a winter of tinkering and a spray in Mamba green paint. Top, lower valance, and bumpers are carbon fiber wrapped. 914s are known for being colorful cars. Hopefully this one's bright enough to go touring with MotorOne.com. Keep up the great work. So here are his two pictures. So that's during the Leaf tour. And then that's after he tweaked on it in the garage during a winter. I love 914s.
Yeah. And Edward, thank you so much for sending this in. If you recall, a few weeks ago, we put a call out to all the Ramblers out there listening. Hey, fall color tour, it's the season. Yeah. Snap some photos of your ride. Snap some photos of your colors. Snap some photos of your colors and the ride. And send them in.
Send us your pictures.
I like that. That looks great.
Yeah.
Good looking car. Love the repaint. Bruce is a big 914 guy. They're growing on me some. They're growing on me some. But you can't.
You'll convince me to like Mustang 2s. I'll convince you to like 914s.
I can't convince anybody to like Mustang 2s, no matter how hard I try. Any car in the setting of fall looks fantastic. Those pictures are great. I can say here in my northern Michigan home, color is definitely past peak. Most of it is in my yard right now because I have several trees that dump their leaves all at once. I did manage to get some of them picked up over the weekend, but it's also been raining and snowing now here the last couple of days. So they just might sit there for right now. But yes, Edward, thank you so much for sending in that email, sending us your photos. And yes, Ramblers, podcast@MotorOne.com is our email. You can send us things anytime. Tell us about your car projects. It doesn't have to be fall color tours. It can be, hey, look at this bolt that I busted off while trying to take the brake caliper off of this stupid Taurus, which has not happened to me yet, but I can promise you it will very soon. And also, we got a shout out to the Ramblers that have been commenting here as we've been talking. We got Ted Adam Green in there. Hey, Ramblers. We got Group FBC coming in here. Vampire Bear, it's good to see you. It's been a little while. I'm late, but I'm here for the live broadcast. Ted Adam Green, great story. Eric's in there too. Afternoon Ramblers, we appreciate everybody showing up for this very special episode. Darren, open mic here. We've still got some time. You're a huge enthusiast. You have Auto Retro on YouTube. That's growing. You have some new videos in the works here. Yes, thank you, Bruce. Pipeline. For some reason, my brain was saying pipe works, and it's like, no, don't say pipe works, Smith. You're gonna look like an idiot. So thanks for jumping in there.
And this pipeline is your chance to promote anything you got coming up, anything you're proud of, anything you want to talk about. Go for it.
We've got so much stuff coming up on the channel. The full dealership is just the tip of the iceberg. We're going to get really involved with some cars. It's not just going to be exploring stuff, even though it looks like it at the moment. We've got a couple of restorations. We've got cars that have been sitting and abandoned for a few years that we're going to get back on the road. And we're just going to get around all sorts of old cars. So we've got an E36, which is an upcoming video that's going to have an auto to manual conversion. We've got a Ford Transit. I won't say too much about that, but we'll have a little. We've had a conversation about that, but there's a very special Ford. That's a full restoration as well. And it's just cars that we're just getting along with cars. Anything great to do with them? We've got a few car collections. We've gone across barn finds. They're probably not barn finds, but we've been exploring people's barns. They're still alive, so it's not a true barn find, I suppose, but the cars are still sitting there, and there's some great stuff, and we're trying to get across to everyone that old cars are the whole of the retro scene is just basically anything that's not mainstream now. So and mainstream's changing, so anything that's out there at the moment is going to be, it's going to look pretty classic very soon. If you look at some of the old cars from, say, 2005, 2010, you'll notice some of them are just not around. So when you do see one, it's really immaculate condition. You'll say, actually, probably like your Mini Cooper, I would say. You'd look at it and say, do you know what? That's one of the best ones around. It's immaculate. And hold on a minute. There's no old beaten up ones anymore. There's just this. And then suddenly you're not an owner. You're an enthusiast.
Bruce, it was a Dodge Avenger that we saw a few weeks ago, wasn't it? Like a 2007 or 2008 Dodge Avenger, something that ended up on, was it Cars and Bids or Bring a Trailer?
Bring a Trailer.
And it was so weird. It was like, because, I mean, Bring a Trailer, okay, people are selling like six-figure cars, and here's a Dodge Avenger that like nobody loves with like 20-some thousand miles. And yeah, Darren, like you're saying, that captured attention. It's like, this isn't a special car, but the fact that it's still like this after this many years, now it is special, right? And that's worthy, right? That's worthy.
I think when you've got a choice of two cars and one's 10 years older than the other, and you're buying the 10-year-old one that's older, 10 years older, not just 10 years old. One might be 20 years old, and one might be 10 years old. And you're buying the older one just because you prefer that over the newer shape, then that's a retro car. And you are now embracing it because you've probably the new, it's you know, no more expensive than buying a much newer one, but you've decided to go for something to keep it going, and you become an enthusiast because you're enthusiastic about it. And I think that's what we're looking at. We're looking at a whole new, and there's a lot of kids out there now that are just starting, and they don't, you know, they've got their little way of what they're doing, and they're not quite sure. And there's a whole lot of cars out there that they may not really know about. And we have noticed on some of our Facebook pages that a lot of people, younger generation, put up a car that's quite obvious what it is to anyone slightly older. But because they're not on the road anymore, they haven't got a clue what it is. And they're yeah. missing out on some really great cars. So we're just mm-hmm. embracing the older stuff. And it's, more analog era, I think.
Not to extend this too long, but my version of that is when I was in high school, there was a very attractive woman, student older than me, who she had a Volkswagen.
It's not another confession, is it?
What's that?
It's not another confession, is it?
That's for the After Hours podcast, Bruce.
It's an automotive confession. But she had a Volkswagen New Beetle in that lime green color with the 1.8 liter turbo and the optional wing on the back. And I would kind of like to have one of those only because it just touches my nostalgia button so hard that that's just a car that I look at and it immediately takes me back to a very specific place.
And that is exactly it, because there's a whole lot of 2000 to 2010 cars that have got a special place for whatever reason with people, and they are the new breed of retro cars. So yeah. that's why we're covering anything from old to, it's got to be a bit special, but you know, so anything old right up until maybe 2008, 2009, because this is the future classics.
Well,
I can't wait. I can't wait to see what you have coming out here. Yeah. YouTube.com Auto Retros UK. That is the channel. We will have that linked. If we don't have it already, I'm not sure. I don't think I had a chance to get everything linked up this time, but I'm going to get everything linked up here in our YouTube video here for the podcast shortly. So you'll be able to jump right over there to see everything that you have going on. Darren, I know it's late for you. Thank you so, so much for bringing this dealership back into the minds of people all around the world, yep. and for being a car enthusiast and for taking some time this evening to just share all that with us and all the ramblers out there. We really appreciate
it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed every minute of it. Thank you.
Very good. And then for all of you out there, we understand that there's a million and one things you could be doing with your time. So we love it when you spend time with us. And we thank you for anyone who is able to join us on this extra early edition of Rambling About Cars, but we couldn't have done it without you because we needed to have Darren on because he has such a cool story. So thank you so, so much, everybody. And so with that, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We just appreciate you all and thank you so much. And with that, we're going to be signing off. So bye-bye.
We'll see everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you.